This is to be a taped interview with Walter van der Velden. For 40 years, the volunteer fire chief of the Forest Grove Fire Department, who was in on the first hours of the original Tillamook Forest Fire of 1933. The tape is being made in Forest Grove at Mr. van der Velden's home. He is 77 years of age in December 1972.
So that takes on Marquis' motor logging truck that he had. Well, I got in on it. This Foster Range, had a sawmill up there.
Mm-hmm.
And he called up and said, my wife is coming down. He said to pick up a bunch of equipment over at Cecil Tile's house. They had a couple of garages there, the equipment stored in. He said, and I don't know whether there's any manpower around there or not. He said, and I wonder if you'd go down and help her load up. Pick up all the stuff they got there, hose and pumpers and everything else. And I said, yeah, sure. So she came by and I went on over, and then his Cecil Tile's son-in-law, he was a forester,
Yeah.
And Mr. Frank McCullough come there, and so we loaded up everything on her pickup, and the pickup he had, and took it up there and loaded on the John Marquis rig and hauled it up to the landing there where they're loading loads. That was far as the road, you couldn't drive up there. So.
Well, he and kids, he brought a, didn't you bring something up on the railroad or something like that, a tank or a water tank or pumper or something like
no,
that?
No. All I done is these marine pumps and a Ford engine and stuff like that. I brought up equipment, hose and everything they had down there. We just cleaned his garage out with the two pickups. And that's just all the equipment the forester had. They had no motorized equipment, maybe on their pickup and so on. So I went up there, and of course I couldn't do much. I got to help him get the engine started, and so on. Burnt the shirt off my back and burnt my part of my overalls off trying to get the engine started. And the darn thing backfired and I skinned all my knuckles on the rock and oh gosh, I had all the time.
What did you say what kind of equipment was it? Mostly hose and...
Well, none of ours, the fire department. I knew we couldn't go up into the woods and sort of knew he was taking anything, so I just went along with the forester guy. Mrs. Rain started out when she got loaded and I went along with Frank McCullough. And we went up there, and then we loaded the stuff all on this here Marquis outfit, and it took about 3/4 mile, I guess, up that creek, up to the landing. And then we sped the stuff.
Was there a road there, or you just went through the brush, did you, or how, or up the creek? Huh?
Went off the railroad.
Oh, went on the railroad.
Yeah, Marquis had
see.
A railroad there, see, from the mill up to where he's hauling logs. What the lady was doing the logging, and Marquis was hauling them into the mill for so much as 1,000. That's the way it was. It's the motorized equipment we built here at the shop.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, whole unit.
How do you spell his name? Do you remember how this...
M-A-R-K-E-E. He's dead.
Yeah. What was his first name?
John. Yeah, he was hauling them on this. They call it the Gillikahike. I don't know how you spell that. Not a nickname they give. But it's a gasoline motorized unit. The thing that surprised me, I don't want that on the record or anything like that. When I left, we got ready to leave. I had everything loaded and ready to pull out. Oscar run over there quick and says, hey, C.C. Scott called up. He was the head of this here Association of Fire Districts, whatever that was. It's a mutual deal.
Oh, yeah.
You heard about that, how that worked. Well, he was the head of it, and of course, his office was in Portland. And he told Oscar, he said, to send word up to Cecil and see if he wants any help. So I said, okay. He said, be sure you do, because he said he wants to know right away so he can get the CC boys up from the, what do you call them, the camp up around West Timber.
Oh, Cochran?
Oh, yeah, it was up in Cochran, but it had another name for it.
Rear
CC camp. So I said, okay. So when I got up there, well, I asked the boys, where the hell is Cecil? Boy said him and some other guys went up, he said, to see where the fire is going and so on. And I said, good gosh, I said, I got word from Oscar from CC, Scott, that they wanted to get a hold of Cecil right away to see if they want some help down. So I said, I'll see to it, he gets word. So one of the forester guys, I think it was Felix, or one of the forester guys, He said, I'll hunt him up. Hell, never got him back there for 2-3 hours before they found him, see? And there Scott was waiting in for him all the time, wondering what in the hell to do.
And where was he? Was he up on the fire?
Yeah, he's way up ahead of the fire. Nothing he could do. He just went up with a few shovels and stuff like
that. How bad was the fire going when you got up there? Was it going pretty good?
Gosh. It's just a hopeless situation. I wasn't used to that. First place, no equipment. The second place, you couldn't get at it. And the third place was just so cockeyed, spread over so much ground, and there's nothing, nobody, human being, can do anything about it. Fact of the matter, you know, yeah, I don't know why they ever brought a map to show you how the setup was there over there. Maybe Bill did. Yeah. And my gosh, it was coming down the hill right down onto this landing where we was at. There's two donkeys there. Mm-hmm. It was kind of a little break because it come down to the creek, and one of them right down by the creek was set the logs on this logging car, see? My gosh, the fire was there, and of course it was blowing over the top of it, and that's how I got my shirt burnt. And the forester had a little forester engine up there, a little Pacific Marine. And then they went to run out of gas and put gas in. The gas can caught fire and the engine caught fire. They threw the whole building in the creek there. They stood empty handed. So when I got up there, we had a couple more engines, 3 engines I think we had, and a bunch of hose. We got them going right away, and then we started sopping things down. But the hill across on the left hand side as you go up, my gosh, there was just spot fires here and there. I don't think it was 30 minutes till the whole cockeyed side of that mountain was on fire. Of course, that was been logged off, dry, and oh gosh, it's just whoosh. Well,
now that side was the side
going up on the right hand side's where it started.
Yeah. And then this is on the left.
Left hand side. Jump. Yeah, the highway is right close to that landing now. The creek is down here in the landing. The highway goes right by. And it's just that whole side of the mountain there. Of course, we was over here on the bank, you know. You can see over there in the hill. Didn't take no time at all to, oh, God. Yeah. It just blossomed right out. There's nothing you can do about it.
Well, they never did get it under control from there on in. Were you up there all day?
I stayed the next evening.
You did?
Yeah, well, it just run away from us all completely. We didn't even know where it went to anymore. But we stay in there in case a little wind kick up again, you know, because sometimes they kind of re-burn, you know.
Yeah.
And kick up again, they stayed in 2 donkeys and a log pile there and so on, so that's all we could do.
Was there any much wind at the time, or did it build much wind right away, or do you remember?
No, didn't seem to be too much, I'd say. Maybe a breeze 5, 6, 7, 8 miles an hour. You know, I think, as I testified before the hearing in Portland, I think I could walk about as fast as the breeze was going when we left town here. Maybe five, a good fast walk, 5, 6 miles an hour.
Well, now the official reports and all the write-ups on the Tillamook, the start of the fire, says that fire jumped from that spot for 6 miles up into that timber toward the rear's camp and started a second big fire up in the Wilson River country. And yet Bill Lida denies this. He says that there was a second fire already going when their fire broke loose. He said, we never denied we had a fire, but he said this other one was going back in there. And did you know anything about that? Did you ever hear that story, or do you know if it's true or not?
I testified down in the hearing that I saw two of them when I went out of town with Phil Frank.
Is that so?
Yeah, there was smoke over here, and I says, Frank, what the hell, you got two of them going? And he looked over, he's passed away now, or otherwise he'd tell you.
Frank who?
Frank McCullough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember that man.
Yeah, that's Cecil's brother-in-law.
Uh-huh.
And he says, by gosh, it looks like it. And I says, yeah. I says, it looks to me like the right hand one over here is the one yours, but the other one looked like it's a little bit further back and up. And he says, by gosh, it looks like. Of course, when we got up Gill Creek, then we couldn't distinguish it anymore. But right when we left town here, well, we talked about it and we got clear over the rear. Rooters over here, we could still see the two smokes.
Well, now, did you ever find out or hear what started that other fire?
No.
You never did?
No. The nearest guy that I know of is old Fred Waters. He and his brother and some of them were up fishing
now.
Yeah, up the Wilson River.
Yeah.
And they thought they seen two smokes, too.
Well,
going on with the beginning of the story, the CC guys come down. They got them down that night, and this next morning, they come by, about 100 and some of them. They were hollering at us guys there. said that they couldn't see, where's the fire? Well, you couldn't see it, you know, it had gone so far already and out of sight, and this is just smoking spots here and there. Where's the fire? Where's the fire? Well, anyway, they got up there a couple of miles and they run into the fire all right enough, and a crown fired on them. And some of them guys run, you know, one of them broke his leg, I believe, and another one's got his ribs busted and so on. And they come back along in the middle of the afternoon. We asked them to found a fire, and you never heard a chirp nowhere. They found it all right. They were, you know, scattered from all over the country. Never saw a timber fire, you know. And mm-hmm. this ground fire took mm-hmm. off, and it, of course, it's a terrible noise, you know, just a roar, you know, and so on. And well, they found the fire, all right.
Mm-hmm. And you stayed up there all night, then, did you?
All that night, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you continue to fight it during the next couple of weeks, or did you just stay down?
I just stayed that day. Then I didn't go up anymore. All I done from then on was keep them forestry pumps running in the shop down here.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
They were bringing them in. I know they brought one, carried one in about 3 miles and got onto some road somewhere and hauled it into the shop and uh-huh. said it wouldn't pump and run a while and it'd go anywhere. The trouble problem was I found out they said there's something slipping in it. Well, I took it all apart, and there was nothing wrong with it. I had test barrels out there, and pressure, and worked fine then. And you know what it matter? Inexperienced operator.
Hmm.
What had happened, the nettles was burning off, you know, and up there, and then it's coming down the screen, and they plugged the screen tight, and no water to get into it. So I sent it back up, and told them, send word up to watch them screens, keep them clean. Yeah, there it is. Well, I suppose it took a guy an hour or two to carry it out and ship it down here and so on. We lost half a day and so on. Of course, that was later on in the fire.
Mm-hmm.
I think, I don't know anything about how the setting was when they had the big fire started, you know, I don't know, later on, you know, a couple of weeks.
Yeah, the big blow up.
Yeah, that big blow up.
Yeah.
Well, there was lack of help there. They could have stopped it. I doubt it, though. And then it went down, the east wind got up, and I'll tell you, you know, the terrain and the country is rough, and it's hard to get at, and there's no trails.
Yeah.
I had a nephew that was, they put him out, but he quit a little bit in the woods, and they had him to lead these federal guys that came from Washington, fire service, federal fire service.
Mm-hmm.
And they were, they were disappointed and amazed. That big area of timber with no roads, speak of, hardly any trails at all or nothing.
Yeah.
They couldn't appreciate that at all. You couldn't get to nowhere.
Hmm.
When you got up to Lorraine Rogers Sawmill, you just come to the end of the road.
Mm-hmm.
You could get up to Old Wilson River Road after a fashion, but then heck, there was nothing only as a road went into Cochran, and that was the end of that again. And I don't know how far they came up Tillamook.
How did they get over to Rear's Camp and in that area?
Walked.
They walk in there?
Yeah. The amazing thing that, you know, I don't know if anybody ever told you that the Army sent a supply station right above our shop there. There was a store building empty. And the Army took that over quartermaster department and furnished bread and food for all these there. They only had a lot of federal men in there and so on to furnish food. And these commanding officers, he's telling me one day, he said, I can't understand. He said, they'll order up a bunch of men and they'll send them out there. And he said, and after about 5-6 hours, taking maybe 3-4 hours to get in there, and when they get there, he said, the guys start getting hungry. Then they have to send somebody else and says, when do we eat? He said, they ought to know when they send 100 men out here, they should start providing food and stuff, because he said, the time they get it in there, he said, them guys, it's way after mealtime already. He said, they can't get on to that. Mismanagement.
Well, did any sparks, did you have any cars around Forest Grove as a result of the big fire? I mean, did they come this way at all, any of the sparks or anything?
No, didn't come
like
as close to the 45 fire.
It didn't?
No, 45 fire got closer to us.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it was right up the head of Scoggins there by the
Lake
School.
Yeah, I remember that one. I was
Yeah, that got closer to the 45 fire. The 33 fire didn't get that close. And then we didn't take any equipment up there until the 45 fire. Then when we got pretty in the hell of a lot of time on that, and first call we got was when they started coming towards the consolidated camp.
Mm-hmm.
We went up and protected a powder magazine all night and most of the next day, mm-hmm. wetting it all down around there, and they kept hooked up to it. Then we had to go back and got down and burned some of their logs and reload down there and got in down there. I'll never forget the afternoon we went up there, about 4 o'clock in the afternoon under daylight saving time. The sun was shining bright and hot, it got dark in there, and we used electric lanterns to hook up our hose around 4 o'clock.
Is that right?
It was so dark. Along about 9 o'clock that night, the wind had shifted, and the smoke sheared weird off a little bit. It started getting daylight. Of course, it didn't last long. It started getting dark again. We stayed there all night and slept with our truck. Then we had to go back up again another time to protect the owl camp with our equipment. Then we had to go back again to protect the grain bridge. Wetting it down around there so the fire was coming up that little devil's fork there. But it got up by so close, and then the wind reversed and it went the other way. Another trip we had is up in the Carnations, big log pile. They had a big landing up there in the up Elk Creek. We took our truck up there and wetting it all down. They couldn't get no marine pump, but they finally got one about dark. So we went back out after we'd wetting everything all down. They buried the donkeys, you know, pile brush on, then take bulldozers and bury them up with dirt, move them out into the flats. Then, of course, eventually it got to run up that Marshall Canyon from the Marshall Boys Mill, run up that canyon, got up to Old Man Potts. Gosh, we was there. Well, I didn't get home. I was spoiling, I believe it was, and I went on up there. We stayed till 11 o'clock, got home at 12. 4 o'clock, we went back up there again. Then we worked away from Old Man Potts around there. And then our big problem then was to shear it off away from the city's property up there. Got into it a little bit, but didn't get hurt too much.
How come the forestry department wasn't out on that? You guys were just helping them, or what?
Yeah, just helping them. Uh-huh. They just didn't have enough equipment to go around because it covered so
much
area.
Yeah, that was still during the end of the war, wasn't it, 45?
And this was, we was right on the end of our rural fire district.
Uh-huh.
If it gets in there, it gets right into our entire Gales Creek, you know. Well, we had a hell of a battle there by Old Man Potts' place, dude. And that hill was so doggone steep, you couldn't come from the creek where the water was uphill. The pump water up there with 29 lengths of hose or 1,450 feet of hose to get up that hill. The pump into the field so we could haul it up the hill. Yeah, we had no communications. There wasn't enough to go around. No communication. So what we'd do, we'd run 10 minutes with the pumper. Had to maybe fill the tank or overfill it. And then shut down for 20 minutes. And then every 10 minutes, we'd pump 10 minutes again. Was the tanker there or not? We had no way to tell. And that hill was a cock-cock steep. Take a guy 20 minutes, half hour to get up there. So that's the way we worked it. Yeah, if you pumped the pressure on the pump 160 pounds, you wouldn't get nothing out of the end of it. Had to get 180 pounds to push the water up there. You can see how much elevation we had.
On the, going back to the F-33 fire, how long was it after it apparently started? Was it before you got out there? About how many hours was it?
Before I went out?
Yeah.
Well, I don't think it was going over an hour, maybe an hour and a half at the most.
By the time you got there?
Yeah, by the time I got to help load up.
And they phoned down here, did they? And
yeah, well, the sawmill did.
The sawmill did.
Yeah, I don't know why some one of the foresters or something said to go down there. She kind of lived over here where Elmer Spooner lived, right across the block over here.
Oh, uh-huh.
19th.
Uh-huh.
Wait a minute. Yeah, 19th.
Uh-huh.
And they had two houses and a garage across the street from where Cecil lived. That was full of equipment. That's all they had.
Oh, I see.
They didn't have no grader.
They didn't have their place out where they are now or anything.
Oh,
like
no, no, no. They didn't have much of anything. Now, the two rigs I took up was two little marine pumpers and one Model T Ford.
Uh-huh.
That Model T Ford is the one I was trying to start. And I shouldn't say this, but you know, that sat there all winter. That oil was black as ink, never changed it, never done nothing with it. And that thing was so darn stiff, we couldn't hardly start it. So I told Frank, let's check the oil on that thing. We drained the oil right over here on the curb. And he found another can there, that oil in, and we put oil in it. Now that was just pure neglect.
And that was Forestry Association equipment.
Yeah, that Northwest Forest. I don't know what's.
Northwest. Forest Fire Association, I think.
Yeah, it was
called
a mutual. They taxed.
The mutual private.
Yeah, they taxed themselves.
The
taxed themselves.
Yeah.
C.C. Scott in Portland really was the secretary for most of all associations.
And Al Kronemiller was up in there somewhere. He was a state forester at the time.
Yeah.
He was up in the area somewhere, which I talked to him on the phone, and he said he was up there looking at timber or some darn thing.
That
I don't
could
know.
Be.
And because he was right there, and I never could figure how he got from Salem so fast, you see.
Well, he must have been there in the first place. Yeah. See, there was Blodgett, you know, and these various big timber owners in there and so on. I'll tell you another thing. Ray Mosher worked for us, you know, he machinist for that big Dutchman, you know, kind of loudspoken.
Yeah.
He machinist for 7 years.
Yeah, I remember him.
And that's the brother-in-law of Cecil.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, he was well acquainted with Cecil because he married, I can't think of the first name now, Grace.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, here's what he said. He's talking about quite an urgent, you know, agitation down Tillamook to get a highway through.
Yeah.
Hell, he said, as long as these big timber owners own that, they'll never get no road through there.
Hmm.
He said, they don't want the public in there. He said, they don't want no damn road there. He said, they never get it through.
I'll be done.
They've been trying, you know, and previous to that, Washington County, I believe, took up a notion one time to get a road through some of the county people, you know, about getting a road through to Tillamook, because, you know, it's 100 miles around. It's only 50-some miles now. Had to go around to McMinnville and Hebo.
Well, there were some of the big companies out there. There was Crossing Western, wasn't there? Wasn't they one of them?
Yeah, Blodgett was someone.
Blodgett
and
was Weyerhaeuser up in there too?
No, I don't think so. Oh gosh.
Oregon American, would they have been in there? Did they come in there?
Tony Neppick.
Oh yeah.
Neppick was in there.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another old fellow out there. He fought his own fire with his own crew. And I don't know if that's Bill. I can't think of his name now. He's an old fellow. He's a bull-headed old guy, but I guess he kept it out of himself pretty well. You know. But anyway, going back to this road building, as soon as the fire went through, you know, the road started coming.
Is that right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, depression came on and so on. You know, they built that door and went to a lot of WPA or... Mm-hmm. Yeah, PWA, the Public Works Problem.
Yeah.
Well, the road started coming right through then. And Mosher sat there when the fire was going on. I said, well, he said, I guess it burnt enough timber now, by gosh, they're going to get their road. That's the remark that he made.
Hmm. Tell me about these hearings. You say they were in Portland. Bill told me they were at Tillamook, and I've been trying to look down there.
Well, there might be some down there, but I went down there and this...
Where did you go? Who conducted the hearings in Portland?
Watzik. Audrey Watzik. You've heard of him, eh? The big timber owner, and I believe he had timber up in there too. Audrey Watzik, the wealthy timber family.
Uh-huh.
Well, I was subpoenaed, and Fred Waters subpoenaed. That Fred Smith was hauling a log over on the right hand side of Gales Creek up there towards Wildcat Mountain, and he came over a little ridge like that, and the forester guys just got up there to stop him. And he says, hell, he said, what are you coming up here stopping me? We ain't got no fire. He said, look behind you over there. He said, you got a good one going. He said, my God, I have. And he left right away to go down and shut him down, see. But Elmer told me that he realized when he was working in the shop, busy, you know, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, when he got through and got relaxed, he said, and he kind of looked around and looked outside. And, gosh damn, he said, it's hot. He said, damn, he said, I'm going to shut the boys down. And he said, he kind of looked around in that direction. He said, he sees smoke raising around him.
And where was he at the time?
At the mill down there. Where
the mill?
Yeah,
at the
shop. See. Himself, personally.
Uh-huh.
But Bill was right on top of the fire. The fire started right down below him, then he's up on that big yarder. You know what a yarder is?
Yeah.
That's the one that drags it over towards the group.
Yeah.
Then there was a skyline 1,000 feet or 1,100 feet down the hill to the landing down there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And Bill was right down on it. They seen a little smoke and whistle for fire, and all the guys run over there and said they had quail in a little spot, but I don't know what he said. Almost at about 100 foot, something like that, just a pile of junk, you know, and so on. And he said, it's getting along all right, had a corral. He said, it looked like everything's going to be all right in the damn world. And he said, and that's what spoiled the whole thing. It just picked that up and threw it up against this side hill, which is previously logged, and it almost took off.
You mean wind did? Or
yeah, whirlwind. You know.
Whirlwind, oh, I see.
Yeah, whirlwind. Just got in there and just picked it up and just threw it all over.
Huh.
Did Bill tell you that?
No, he didn't tell me that. No.
Well, that's what happened. Bill told me that. He said, hell.
Well, he must have forgotten that, because he gave me a lot of detail, but he didn't say anything about a whirlwind.
Yeah, right on this particular spot, right on the fire raised.
Uh-huh.
There was quite a clump of brush and stuff there and so on, and they growled it.
Uh-huh.
And had it just, well, practically all done, you know. It had basically licked already. It was just trying to cool it off a little bit when that whirlwind and threw it all up against the side. I talked to some other guys that knew about it too and said, hell, it just took. See, Bill, that bank was right down to Bill.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was right on the edge up here, see.
Yeah.
He had laid over this way, see, down here where there was logging over here and a little hump right over here. and come around this hump and then drag him up here, and then the Skyline brought him down here to another little hump. Then another little donkey brought him down to the, where they loaded him. That was all over that on foot. After the fire was going, cooled off enough by daylight, so he'd go on up to see what happened to the upper donkey, because we just got through building it.
Yeah, he told me that. You just got through with that.
Yeah, big gas donkey, you know, a nice machine. And that Skyline didn't get burnt too awful bad except on the ends. When it got hot enough, it fell right down in the track where they dragged them along, and dust was about this deep and just buried it there.
On the yard.
Yeah, saved most of the Skyline. That was a big, either inch and three quarter or 2-inch line. It was buried right in the dust. But it's sure a helpless feeling when you, you know, can't get no equipment at it. And if you did, I don't think you could do a thing, because the wind and the dry area and everything, or the human being could have just completely licked it, like stop a flood to me.
About how far from the railroad were they up on there where it started? 1,000 feet?
The Skyline was 1,000 feet. Let's see, it'll be about 150 feet uphill like this to where that one donkey was. The Skyline was over 1,000 feet long. Then they logged down here another 1,200 feet. I expect total distance maybe a half a mile going over the, as you, not as a crow fly, but as you walk between all the guy lines and all the main lines. Maybe 1,000 feet here and maybe a couple hundred feet here, or maybe 300 for the first donkey. And then that was 1,000 or 1,200 feet to the next donkey. And the other one, I suppose, reached out maybe 1,000 feet or 1,200, see? That made quite a little distance. And of course, where we was at, we had the first hump to look at. And then there was a long stretch there, went up like this, fairly, you know, inclined. And then the fire was down in the next place. And Elman said they tried to cover the donkey, they didn't give him the best they could, but didn't give him no time. He said, just going to swept up that hill so damn hot. Of course, you know, when you build up heat, whoosh. Just had to get out of there.
Well, the humidity was so low that day, too. It just kind of exploded, didn't it?
Because I set that engine off there, and I had just a submarine. The boys took that, and I took this Ford engine and set it down there, and they started, boys, hooking up the hoses, two hose lines on it, you know, into the creek and so on. And I was trying to start it and so on. In the meantime, by gosh, sparks got on top of my back. And I had overhauls on and burned my shirt off, undershirt. I didn't get burnt very much. Burned my handkerchief up. I had to put it in the other pocket and everything. And they started throwing, they got a lunch bucket and throwing water on me. And you know, the next morning, them guys had been working since 4 o'clock the morning before. And they were there all day, you know, and then all night. And smoke, oh gosh, can I breathe once in a while? I kind of lay down, especially at night. And you know them poor guys, they come sunlight, they couldn't see. You know what I did with them? Took them down to the creek down there and had them to take their handkerchiefs and rinse them out good and just take their cold, wet handkerchiefs and put over their eyes. Bill Lighty, he was just completely blinded.
Is that right?
Yeah. And I had to put that cold water on him and he had 15, 20 minutes just walking around, helping himself. Just cold water. I'd already done that, see? When I see they were getting in trouble, so I told them what I did. I said, I don't know how it'll work, but it works for me. I went down there, like Bill, he couldn't see nothing. He'd be talking to you like this. Bill, I'll fix you up, so I took him down to the creek.
About how many men did they have out there that first day? How many did you take with you?
None.
None of you?
No, I just helped them load the equipment. That's all I was asked to do. And I asked him about the fire truck, and he said, help. He said, you can't get up there. He said, the only farther you can go is the mill here. He said, the fire is a half a mile from up here. So, there's no use taking anything. But you couldn't get up there. There was no road. Nothing but just this railroad track.
It was just yourself then you went up?
Yeah, I just went up myself. All I could do was help keep the equipment operating and so on and so forth. That's all. Went down and get more fuel, stuff like that. You know, just kind of a handyman around.
About how far away was this other fire then? 2 or 3 miles, or
you know? Gosh, I don't know. If I'd known what I know now, I'd have tried to get one, tried to estimate how far it was. But it looked to me like it was 2, 3, 4 miles or something like that. I had no idea, see, because I didn't know what it was all about. And I asked Frank. I says, Frank, you suppose that were a whirlwind. He knew about the whirlwind radio. Suppose that blew that clear over? Well, he said it might, but he said, gosh, it looked quite a ways off.
Yeah.
That's all I know.
Yeah.
It might have picked up a rotten piece, you know, a piece of rotten wood and threw it over there. That I don't know. And I'm not too sure what Fred Waters said. I know I talked to him about that. He's up there waiting about it and so on, what he was going to talk about, what he testified to and so on, but well, he thought that fire wasn't too far from Wilson River somewhere.
Him well, I always claimed that the light of fire jumped that distance, but it just seemed kind of impossible at that stage.
Well, that's like
would do
Frank,
that. I know
like
they
Frank said there.
Yeah.
He said it could be. He said, but gosh, he said that's quite a ways off.
Yeah, yeah. But then, well, what would have been up in there? Was there logging operations up in there or nothing up in there?
Nothing. There's a.
Did they have any settlers up in there at all? Or anybody living
there? No road up there.
No road.
At that time, they realized the unit had dropped down so fast or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I don't blame them really, because it's just one of these things that happens.
Yeah.
Yeah, lightning fire could have done the same thing probably, could hit the same place, and the whirlwind hit at the same time. The whirlwind is what set the whole thing going.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether that would have set the other one going, or
well, that could have set the other one going.
That
it traveled far enough. Yeah, that makes sense. It,
Bill said it was pretty strong.
Yeah.
And he said right away, he said just in a few minutes, he said the whole side here start firing.
Uh-huh.
Of course, when it got up to the top line, then it just had a lot of momentum, a lot of heat, and that just threw fire all over. That's what our problem was down there, is coming up the other side. That's what was giving us trouble down there at the landing, and we were quite a ways off from it.
Yeah, yeah.
Normally, on an ordinary fire, that wouldn't hardly bother you.
Uh-huh.
I seen that one time we had to go up to the Owl Camp, and as you go up, so I'll camp on the right hand side. On the right hand side there, as you go up, there's quite a mountain there.
Yeah.
There was spot fire in there. Now we come back up there from down to the Graham Bridge. We came back up there to the Owl Camp 1.5 hours, 2 hours after, and there was solid fire. And there was just a spot here and there.
And when was that? The same
day? 45.
Oh, 45. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we was up there with a tanker then.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Actually, we put a lot of fire hours in that hot fire. I got 300 hours on that fire.
Is that right?
Yeah, in the watershed and all that. I was up there for days in the watershed with the trailing crews, you know, and then afterwards kind of watch out. You have a city property involved up there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
That's the time when we put in hours, the firemen too.
Yeah, I bet you did. Well, it was one in 51, too, up in that country that was exploded. But, of course, they had more.
39
and 45, and then 51 or 52.
Yeah, a smaller one.
Yeah. They had one up there 2 years ago. I was out there recently, and they told me they had 40,000 acres burned up in there.
Not up in this one, was it?
In the burn area. Yeah. I saw where she burned, maybe not 40, but a good big area. Maybe it was 4,000, I don't remember. But anyway, up there beyond the Owl Camp, and there they had a fire. Cad, that country's beautiful now, though. You been out in there lately?
Not lately, no.
Oh, it does your heart good. You ought to take a ride out there, because I was out a couple weeks ago with Hostin, a forester, and he took me up on some of those high ridges, and you can look clear to tell them nothing but trees.
Yeah.
I never thought they'd do it. You know, it looked so bad.
Yeah.
When I lived out here, and they were talking about that and everything, I just never thought they could ever clean it up.
Looked like hopeless, yeah.
Yeah, it just looked hopeless.
Well, I'll tell you, you've got to hand this forester or whoever's in charge of it. They've done a pretty good job up there planting trees again, building all them roads. They got about 300 miles of road.
They're telling me at the end of this year, this winter is the last winter of the planting under the bond program. The people voted. They'll have planted 73 million trees. Something? Hand plant 73 million trees? That's a lot of trees. Of course, that doesn't include all the aerial seeding they've done.
No.
Really. But,
you know, I've been making some new things for the forestry.
Oh, have you?
You know, they had the old head, kind of a hazel hole, you know, they had, you know, it looked like a grub hole handle, you know, and you hole a place and then chop a hole in there and stick it in.
I know what they are, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I take a piece of 2-inch cone roll shafting, 8 1/4 inches long, and I put it in the lathe, and I bore a tapered hole like this to put a straight shovel handle in it. See?
Mm-hmm.
Then I turn the outside tapered and then kind of dub it off like that, and what they're doing, they're planting seeds now. They put 2 seeds in these little pellets, like, you know, we swell up, you know, and they get moisturized and so on. And they just take that thing and jam it in the ground, stick that pellet on, step on it, and go on. Now they team them now for the Bureau of Land Management.
Is that right?
And they're experimenting.
Is that your own idea?
Well, no, not quite. They had a kind of an idea, and then Pat fixed up one, or between him and Frank. And then it was too heavy. It weighed 8 pounds and something. That was too heavy, you know. So they want to know if we could reduce it to 3 pounds. Well, Fred and Pat talking about it, and we said, well, we can try it. So we tried one. By boring that hole in, now what Pat had there was a, the shaft was about 7 inches long, or 7 1/2 inches long. Mm-hmm. Then he had a washer welded around that. They put a washer on that so you can step on it if you have to. And then the stub stuck out this here, and then he put a tapered deal on there to put the handle in. So I eliminated all that. Instead of putting all that extension on top, I bored a hole in there and put the handle right into the main slug. And I brought that down to a little less than 5 pounds. Mm-hmm. And they're really pleased about it, so I just got through making 18 of them a couple weeks ago. It takes quite a lot of work. You use temper attachment on the lathe to bore that all out and fit them shovel handles in there, and then they put a pin through them and so on.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're tickling death.
You don't have one here, do you?
No, I don't.
Next time I'm out, you're at the shop, I'll come around, I'd like to see one.
I don't think we got any on hand.
Oh, don't you?
No, I had to make up 4 of them right quick. Pat says maybe you can make 5 of them in the time limit. I had to get them out by a certain night. Mm-hmm. And I said, I'll try 5. So I started out, I could always drop one, you know. Mm-hmm. I got them out, and they're shipping them to Roseburg, to the office down there at Roseburg.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. That's a pretty handy-looking tool now.
It sounds like it.
Yeah, it's got about a... On a 5 1/2 inches, you got 9/16 taper, and then it's kind of dubbed off rounding like that, and then it's, you know, pointed like, and so on. Then the handle fits right in there, and that washer, we use an 1 5/8 washer and bore it out a little bit, and I turn it to 1 7/8 here, see, and then I turn the other end down to 1 5/16, then dub it off, and so on. It's a nice looking tool, and Sandy, they're really happy with it. Now, how successful that type of seeding is going to be, I don't know. But they wanted experimenting with them, and somebody had worked it out.
Are they doing any of that out here, experimenting with it out here, or is it just down in
the... I don't know. I don't know about that. All we're dealing with is the Bureau of Land Management.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Their head office, I think, is in Portland.
Yeah, I know some of the guys.
And they've shipped this original one around from place to place, but the only kick they had, they thought it was a little bit too heavy.
Mm-hmm.
So then they brought it back and know if we could reduce it. So then we sent... Send a new one that I made up for and weighed 5 pounds, and the other one weighed a little over 8, and send them both back and see what they thought of the both of them side by side. They didn't go for that heavy one.
How come they came out to you? What?
I don't know. Pat, I don't know how he got hooked up to them.
Uh-huh.
Gosh, I made 18 of them. I paid a pretty good price for them, but my golly, that's quite a lot of work. I got to drill that darn hole in there. 5 inches deep, you know, 15-16 hole, and that takes time, you know. I can't push that big drill straight through. I gotta run with a smaller drill and follow up.
Well, that'd be a great way to plant, you know.
It's a pretty short shot. They only lose 1 year. But I guess their original planting is more than, you might say, near 100%.
Because the aerial seeding, you just spread it on the ground and your birds get a lot of that.
Yeah, and the squirrels. Mice
are
quite a problem.
Yeah.
Then so much of it lands on top of logs, you know, and so on and so on. But this here, why they put it right in the ground.
Yeah,
right,
that'd be a sure shot. Yeah.
And most of the ground they're working on is not like a road bed or anything like that, you know. It's more or less duff, you know, and stuff like that, you know. So it's not hard to jam them down. So they don't go too deep and so on while we get this washer. It's about this big in diameter, see?
Mm-hmm.
Flat washer. And I put it in the press, and I cup it. So it flares up all the way around, see? Then, you know, it won't feel up and dirt. If you have to, well, you can step on it and so on. But that keeps you going down to the uniform depth all the time. You go down about, totally, I think about 7 1/4 inches.
What's happened to the Forestville Fire Department now? Is it still volunteer, or do they have paid employees?
They have 7, I think, paid men.
They do?
Yeah.
They never paid you guys very much anything, but now they got just
well,
like
the
everything
last,
else.
The last 10 years they paid me.
Did they?
Yeah, I got full paid last time.
Uh-huh. Oh, I was after you quit the machine shop, did you? Or?
Yeah, and then I went to work for the city, you know. I went to work on the disposal plant.
Oh, yeah.
Started in down there, and then between it and the water department, and so on, I was around there 3 years, and then when they...
Well, did you take Troy Hines' job with the water department?
No, he was the head guy, but then they had the 2 shifts.
Oh.
In the summertime, 3 shifts.
Uh-huh.
I and Walt Weber and Troy.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I seen run 7 days a week, you know. So I went up there, and then between times I'd help on the water departments, you know, whatever had to be done. I was to work 3 years, and then when they voted for paid men, well, I and Frank Stahl and my son Ray went on.
Mm-hmm.
And I stayed with that till I'm 64.
Mm-hmm.
8 years I've been out now. Well, I was getting old. I was 68 years old,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
I was 77 last Friday.
That's what you were saying. You don't look it at all.
I still do it for a good work, day's work around the machine shop, but that's... I just fill in down there. See, whenever they need help, they just call up, and I come down and work whatever time they need it. And if I get caught up, I just go home.
Well, that old machine shop work was pretty hard work at times, I concluded, when I used to go in there and see you guys. You really worked.
Well, we done a lot of heavy work.
All long hours, too, weren't you?
Yes. If we went home before 10 o'clock on during the week, then guys, what's the matter? You guys sick last night? Gee, we worked, you know, 9 hours a day from 8 to 6 every day.
And if you get a fire and interrupt you, that was just that much more time lost.
I try to make up time over the weekend, you know, because we're in partnership.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we worked long days. One time Carnation busted a big Corliss engine down there on Friday morning. You know when we got home? Monday afternoon, 2 o'clock.
Jeez.
Well, I didn't come home. I stayed until 6 o'clock. 5 hours. Nobody slept awake. Get that engine in the morning.
How long were you with the fire department?
40 years.
40 years, and you were chief how long?
32.
How long, 32?
Yeah.
Well, nice.
Left-hand side one here, if you can see him.
I'll get up. See what he's going to do.
And we came to Forest Grove, you know, in 23, starting machine shop up, and old Joe Lindenwell was fire chief, and he came in the shop one day, and he said, we're awful short on volunteer firemen. You want to get you boys interested in it?
Who was chief then?
Joe Lindenwell. He served 22 years.
Uh-huh.
So we didn't know, and so on. We talked about it a while, and so I thought, well, we'll try it. So the three of us, I and Frank. Frank still belongs.
Does he?
Yeah, 48 years.
Hmm.
Fred Mills, he's still an honorary member. He joined the fire department 61 years ago.
Is that right?
1911.
I'll be darned.
Yeah. Well, anyway, well, we joined, signed up, and then Bill, he stayed with it till as long as he lived in town here, but then when he went to California, and he fell out. But Frank was secretary for 40 years. Secretary and treasurer.
Yeah, I remember. He was secretary. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he still belongs, does he?
Oh, yeah, he's kind of a life member. And he's a treasurer, treasurer now, instead of secretary. He handles the finances and so on. See, it's an incorporation.
Oh, it is?
So, yeah.
Well, Bill Lyder said he saw you down at one of the steam shows or something with the old pumper one time.
State Fair.
State Fair, was it?
Yeah, we took State Fair. I drove 1,000 miles keeping that thing going, you know, for the whole period of the fair. I drove down every day.
Oh,
it steamed up by 11 o'clock and run it till 6, and then I'd head for home.
Tracked a lot of people, did it?
Oh, gosh. They had if you've been around the fair, they had this and so forth. He said, I don't know. He said, well, I'd like to have you come back or not. He said, you draw all the attractions. He said, we just sit here and look on. Oh, gosh.
Mm-hmm.
And every old guy that ever belonged to a fire department or drove fire horses or anything like that, I had all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him, next time we ever do this again, you know what I'm going to do? I said, I've answered the same questions thousands of times. I said, I think we ought to have a recording of this so I don't have to be sat there talking all day.
Yeah.
They want to know how quick we get up steam and how we kept them hot. And, oh, gosh, Now they pull them with horses, and one old guy waited down there, and I didn't get there, and he said, I'll wait. His father raised horses for the Chicago Fire Department and broke them.
Is that right? Yeah.
He knew all about them, too. He knew all how they hitched it and everything. And we had the three tongues on there. We should pull them with three horses. Three tongues, and them guys couldn't see that. We pulled them with horses. Gosh, and they said, well, how long did it take you to get steam? Well, we had steam all the time. Because originally they had a coal burner down in the basement or in the corner somewhere, and they kept 10 pounds of steam on them boilers all the time.
Mm-hmm.
The time you drove two blocks and they hooked up on the hydrant and so on, they start pumping. Because they were already steamed up, and they had set kindling, and they used an excelsior, you know, and a little bottle of kerosene, and they mm-hmm. cracked that bottle of kerosene, just dropped the glass right into his milk, mm-hmm. and stick a match to it, and kindling, you know, and then they used some rosin along with it, and some coal, and heck, as soon as they start moving, the draft would pick up, heck, go right along. Mm-hmm. We took it down to Gales Peak Mill one time, and the guy said, hell, why do you bring that thing for? It'll take you all day to steam up. I said, it'll popped off once by the bridge and popped off once just before I got here. And I said, it's going to do it again. About that time, popped again. He said, I'll be damned.
Oh, okay.
I said, yeah, hell. Some guy up there, he wanted to know what I knew about it.
Yeah.
So I took an affidavit to it, and that's what they questioned me on and so on. And this Lumber Smith, I think he died and had him there. And Elmer Lighty was there, and I don't know. Cecil Kyle, of course, he was the head of the association. C.C. Scott was there. All the guys that seemed to be around pretty quick on fire. I don't know whether Oscar Range was there or not. I don't believe he was.
Mm-hmm.
But I think generally speaking, the whole thing was wanting to know whether there's any neglect aspect as far as Lighty is concerned and so forth.
Well, Bill said that they got billed for the thing and it bankrupted them.
Huh?
Bill said that they were billed for they were blamed for the fire and that they billed them for it and that they bankrupted them.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah, and so something must have come out of it in the way of a hearing, and this is why I wondered what I'm trying to do is find the papers, you see, that hearing. If there was a government hearing, they'd be on file somewhere, you see.
Well, I think that it had to do with the State Board of Forestry Association,
did.
Yeah. I think that's what was behind it now. Watzik, whether Watzik was president of this Forestry Fire Association at that time or not, I don't know. And I don't know how he got there, less by the appointment and so on, but he seemed to be the head of the show.
I see.
Gosh, I just can't remember, but I know.
Did it make the papers at all? Do you remember? Did they have any newspaper coverage on it?
Not darn no. If it was, I didn't know it.
Mm-hmm.
We were down there all day. They called us in one after another. It wasn't all one opening, so one by one we went in.
But you think it was that fall after the fire was over? That'd be the fall of 1933 then.
Near as I can remember, yeah.
Uh huh. Uh-huh.
Wasn't too long afterwards.
Uh huh.
Elmer Lighty was there. I believe Bill Lighty was there. Does he remember about it?
Well, he remembered that there were some hearings, but he couldn't tell me where, or he thought they were down in Tillamook, you see.
No, I didn't know nothing about that. But Cecil Kyle was there, and I know he knew I was on the witness, and he called me over and said there's something wrong with his washing machine just the day before.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't find nothing wrong with it. He just wanted to know what I was going to tell him down there, and I didn't tell him nothing either. Well, that's why you got me over there for,
mm-hmm.
you see,
mm-hmm.
to see what I was going to say.
Well, what was he afraid of? Would he be blamed for it, or what? Or he just didn't want to look bad, or what?
I guess maybe he didn't want to look bad or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Of course, in the 45 fire, he lost his job there.
Oh, yeah. Well, heck, I was...
Mismanagement.
I was in on that when it was, golly, you'd call out there and he'd deny everything, you know, and I said, you got a fire out there? He said, we haven't got any fire. Where, you know? I said, I can see it. I'm standing in my doorway with News Times. I can see the darn thing, you know? He's a real funny guy.
Talk to Walt Weber up there by the dams. I shouldn't do that again. And tell him he's going to send help. No. How was that? Then he come down and met me down there coming in, and he said, we ain't got no help. He said, got no equipment, we can't do a doggone thing. And he promised Walt up there, and he drove about a mile, and he had a different story.
Yeah, yeah.
You know how Ed Schroeder got his job, don't you? Said, if I was running this show, I'd do it different. How are you going to do it different? He told him, they spin some pretty good. And that's where he landed.
Yeah. He's sure gone up right to the top. I was talking to him the other day. He's a great guy. I like him. Frank Sargent. Yeah. Took all of the boys with him, didn't he?
Yeah. Well, Frank was a forester, you know, graduated forestry.
He was raised out here too, wasn't he?
Yes, sir. His mother owned that post office there for years.
Yeah, they wanted me to go with them, you know, because I was doing so much writing for them and everything, but I wanted to do other things. But when he went down to the state, he wanted me to do their publicity for them.
I had quite a forester meeting, you know, a long time after, many years ago, down to Portland. Down there, some kind of forester guys and so on, the big shots and big bills and stuff like that, you know. And Ivan Pearson went down. Gosh, you ought to hear old Ed tell them guys what kind of fire chiefs we two were. We was kind of right-hand men, you know, with I and Ivan. We were invited to all their programs and everything like that and so on. Always tried to help. There were no quiz. If they'd call on to help, we'd help them and so on. I have them the same way, no question about it. We got along just like brothers. He explained that whole thing to them guys, and it's his office record, too. Just happened to see us guys there and start in on us.